Hey, welcome to Night School, and tonight we are going to be talking about dad anger and prank phone calls. And you hear a lot today about dad jokes. You hear people, usually younger people, many of them not fathers, not dads, say, "I make dad jokes." A lot of what I say, I love dad jokes. I make so many dad jokes. And people will often call things dad jokes. They're usually describing something that's a simple pun. It's usually a silly, kind of stupid joke. The kind of thing that if your dad were to say it would make you go, "Dad, dad." But a lot of the people who make those jokes aren't dad jokes, because if a dad makes a dad joke, he's probably going to call it just a joke. It's just a joke. So people, you know, they love dad jokes. They're very popular, but they're the kind of things that kind of make you cringe a little bit, but they're silly and they're fun. And so you hear a lot about these dad jokes, but you don't hear often about dad anger. And that's probably just me. I'm probably the kind of person who wants to hear about dad anger because there's something wrong with me. And dad jokes just don't do it, so I'd rather focus on dad anger. And by dad anger, I'm not going to be focusing on the content, because dad jokes are all about the content. You know, it's what's inside of the joke that makes it a dad joke. But dad anger is less about what it is in response to. It's less about the content of the anger and what provoked the anger, and it's more about the behavior itself. Because there is this very special form of anger that comes from fathers, and usually nice fathers. I think there's a different form of dad anger that is beastly and horrific and abusive, and that's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about this particular form of anger when a father, an otherwise nice father, an otherwise mild-mannered father, is at wit's end, and his voice becomes shrill, and it's almost like his throat opens up and he loses all manhood. And he doesn't become effeminate. I want to be very clear about that. He doesn't lose his manhood and become effeminate or emasculated. It's almost like he becomes inhuman. He loses his manhood in that sense. He becomes inhuman and almost wraith-like. Almost like a wraith, where his voice becomes high-pitched and it shrieks. But it's not like a woman screaming at you. It's not like a child screaming at you. It's like something inhuman, like a wraith. And you'll only see it in certain situations, because there's this sort of stern. Those dads will get kind of like this quiet anger where they're like, "Come on, you know, like we're getting out of here." You know, they'll get that kind of way, but this is when they've just completely lost it, and there are only certain situations where you will see it, but when it happens, you'll find yourself, like, just struggling not to laugh, because all you want to do is laugh. And I have a memory in particular of my friend's dad. He had to get up early for a flight, so he was sleeping in a different room than he normally slept in that was directly above my friend's room. And we were having a sleepover, so naturally we were being rambunctious and loud. And I remember him coming to the stairs repeatedly, because it was a basement bedroom, and he was coming to the top of the stairs repeatedly, and just the dad anger, you could call it danger. Danger sounds kind of weird. The danger was growing in him. The dad anger was growing in him each time he came to the top of the stairs. And he didn't want to be taking that business flight, you know. The whole situation, everything that he didn't want to have happen probably led him to that moment. And he got to the top of the stairs, and he was just like, "Ah!" You know, his voice just got shrill, and each time he was telling us to be quiet. I can't even do it. That's the thing. I can't really do a proper impression of this without just really opening my throat and shrieking, and I'm not going to do that because all you'll hear is microphone static anyway. So just imagine a Lord of the Rings wraith with a little bit, there's still some humanity left. I'm not going to say that these guys go full ring wraith, but they, you know, there's still a little echo of humanity in there. But I just remember this, my friend's dad, like seeing his silhouette at the top of the stairs and just hearing this. And we were just dying of laughter. It's almost like we wanted it to keep happening. And, you know, I didn't grow up living with my dad, you know, most of my childhood. So I didn't really see this sort of dad anger come out of him. And I don't know if he's really the type. He's definitely mild-mannered and very introverted. But I never saw him actually erupt like in a shriek or anything like that. But I did see him many times get angry. And when he did get angry, his voice would get high-pitched. So I think he's very capable of what I'm talking about here. I just didn't, I never saw a particular situation that pushed him over that limit. But his, when he would get angry, his voice would get kind of high-pitched. Criminy. I think he would say criminy, which I should really start saying. Criminy. I should look up what that actually means. It's a great old man. It's a great statement of old man disgust, but it's also kind of light. You know, it's like you're not fuming too much. Because if you say the word criminy, you can't be that upset, but you're upset enough to say criminy. But I remember my dad kind of getting angry in that way. And the high-pitched thing is essential. Because if a dad grunts or a man himself, because that's a thing, too, I want to say, is that there are a lot of men get angry a lot. Men are very prone to aggression and anger. It's something that I think makes us men, is that we have that very aggressive boiling point we get to. And it's very different from female anger, which is certainly a thing. I mean, I'm not saying that women don't get mad and don't shriek. God knows they do. But there's something about being a dad that brings out this particular variation of male anger. And from younger men or men who aren't fathers, they tend to keep like the low end. They kind of keep that gruff grunt. You know, they still want to sound like they're a bear. Or you know, some kind of beast of burden who's grunting in anger, you know, trying to like communicate that your testicles are there and large, and therefore you have a low voice, and you get guttural. Guttural is the word for a lot of male anger. And I know when I've been pushed past that point, which has been relatively rare, but when I do, I tend to get guttural. I don't get that high-pitched thing going on, but I really understand the high-pitched thing because I've done vocals in bands and that type of thing where I've done a high-pitched scream, and it comes from that place. It's like you're using your diaphragm to push out those sounds. It's not coming from your throat or your gut so much. Maybe the diaphragm's in the gut. I don't even know where it is. I've always heard people say that, like, do it from your diaphragm. Do it from your diaphragm, and I don't even know where that is. A vocal teacher in New York could tell you. Your diaphragm's here. But with that non-dad anger, it's like almost trying to like sound like some like hulking beast. And there are dads who do that, and those are the scary dads. You don't laugh at those dads. It's not funny when one of those dads gets mad. That dad usually has a problem, many problems. But with the dads who turn into wraiths, the wraith-like dads, they're generally not scary people, and they're generally not going to scare you even when they're at their most angry. Although I think that kind of dad, once they completely lose it, like I think they have a certain number of eruptions into dad anger that their body and mind allows them, and then once they hit a limit, they might kill their family. Or something like that. You know, I'm not going to say these guys are completely harmless. I think that there's a limit. I think everybody has a limit. And even though I think, like, essentially dad anger is like the world communicating to you, like, you've pushed dad too far, reel it in a little bit, hold your laughter, wait till his back is turned to start laughing. But don't keep doing it, because if you keep doing it, then he's really going to lose it, you know. Next time you see him, he's going to be sleeping in his car, you know. There's something about becoming a father that allows this to come out. Maybe, you know, like in the same way that I think like other men get angry and they are essentially trying to communicate that, like, I have big balls. You know, they have this guttural, like they're just communicating their testicles through their voice. I think that with dads, they've already done some communication with their testicles because they're dads. Their testicles are practically walking around. You know, they have children who came from their testicles. So they don't have to prove to anybody that they're a man. They don't have to prove to anybody that they're sexually viable, you know. So it doesn't matter if they lose that manhood and they become a shrieking wraith. I think that that's an aspect of it. You know, I'd love to, I know that I'm probably just stealing a famous psychologist's theory on this with that last statement. I know I'm probably stealing from some pop psychology. You know, dad's testicles are out walking around playing Nintendo, so they don't have anything to prove sexually, therefore they shriek like wraiths. I know a number of papers have probably been published that state that exact thing, but I thought of it on my own. I thought of it on my own, so I'm going to give myself a little credit there. But another example I can remember of that sort of dad anger was involving a prank phone call, the other topic I'm going to be talking about here tonight. And it should be an obvious source of dad anger, a prank phone call. A prank phone call to a dad is obviously going to push him over the limit. Thinking about a dad at wit's end, some obnoxious repeat prank phone call, you will hear that dad shriek. You will hear his voice become high. You will see something different in his eye. It's a poem, too. You will hear his voice become high. You will see something different in his eye. That's the poem of dad anger. Again, I'm probably just stealing from some famous poem. I bet Walt Whitman or one of those guys wrote a poem about this, and I'm just thieving it. I'm thieving it. But a prank phone call will obviously bring something out of a dad if the dad is on the receiving end, especially if it's from a total stranger, because a prank phone call to a household is kind of a challenge to that household. And if a dad has to hear somebody prank him, it's kind of like, it's a weird form of home invasion. You know, it's a psychic, it's a mental, psychological home invasion. And, you know, of course a dad is going to lose it at that. But I have this experience where it was when I was just the age, probably like right on the dot of the age when I no longer had to have a babysitter. So I'm going to say about 12. It was definitely late elementary school. So I'm going to say, let's just say about 12. Sixth grade sounds about right. And I had a friend over, and his name was also Eric. Spelled differently, though. So but that was cool. The two Erics hanging out. So what are the two Erics going to do? We're going to make prank phone calls. Because you still could when I was 12. This is probably 1997. And you still could. People didn't really have caller ID yet. And if they did, it wasn't really reliable. Star 69, you know, wasn't tattooed on the back of everybody's eyelids. You know, the knowledge of what to do in response to a prank phone call just wasn't really there. And the technology certainly wasn't. But the two Erics, we decided to prank phone call this poor girl. She was babysitting a friend's little brother, one of my best friend's little brothers. So I got the inside scoop. It's almost like getting the inside scoop on like a burglary where it's like, well, my brother-in-law knows the night watchman. And he takes his lunch break at 12:30, and that means we can go in there at 12:31 and rob the whole place. You know, it's almost like that, but instead it's like, well, my best friend, his family is going out to dinner that night, but they're leaving the youngest one at home, and so they're hiring a babysitter, and we happen to know the babysitter. She happens to be a girl in our grade. So what better thing could we do with our time being left to our own devices, two 12-year-old boys with a couple landlines and a whole house to ourselves, what better thing could we do with our time than to prank call this poor girl? And I think Scream had just come out. It had. Scream came out in 96, I think, so, and we were into that. So we had this influence of vicious, scary phone calls, this inspiration, and so we pranked her a few times, and I don't think it was that scary, you know, we were just kind of messing around, but she ended up, it got back to the parents that night. It was really quick. You'd think cell phones were still around, and I don't think they were, but she knew, no, they didn't have cell phones. I mean, cell phones were around, but nobody involved in this had a cell phone. This is a great example of how things used to work. When they left her to babysit, they told her the restaurant they were going to be at, so she called the restaurant, told them that she was being prank phone called, and then they somehow contacted, I think they probably called my house, but I didn't answer. And that's when you get that feeling of like, I fucked up. I did something wrong. Oh shit, I'm gonna be in trouble. That's the feeling. It's like, I'm about to get in trouble. And what's amazing about that feeling when you're growing up, especially, and before you know how stupid most trouble is, before you know how not in trouble you really are in those situations, it's almost like getting a detention or getting, we used to have this thing in school called a communication slip, and it was completely meaningless. I think if you got enough communication slips, you would eventually get a detention, but the communication slip itself was just a warning. And I do feel like making prank phone calls, though, would be a good reason to get a communication slip, because that's literally a communication problem. You're literally using a communication device. You're abusing a communication device. I think that deserves a communication slip. But yeah, just to go back to how things work, it's like she knew the restaurant that the parents were at, so she called that. Then they were able to figure out who was making the prank phone calls, and then we just knew we were in trouble from that point. From going from this like just gleeful horror and joy, you know, of making prank phone calls, you know, just the exhilaration of that, the horrible exhilaration of that, to just knowing you're in trouble and having that feeling in your gut, you're nervous, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, what are they going to do to you? They're going to kill you. Your parents are going to kill you. Because, like, what can they really do? Ground you? I mean, there's only so many things that a sane parent can do. Obviously, certain parents can do really fucked up things to punish their kids. But, I mean, all the parties involved in this, we didn't have a lot to worry about. We didn't have a whole lot to worry about. But what ended up happening was they couldn't get a hold of my mom, and so they got a hold of my friend's dad, the other Eric. They got a hold of his dad. And so he was going to come over, and I think he just called and said, "I'm on my way." And you could already hear the dad anger in his voice. And he had glasses. He worked for a computer company back before anybody else did. And dare I say nerdy, and not nerdy, like he was socially competent, but, you know, he was kind of ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time, a man ahead of his time, but still prone to dad anger. And I remember the back steps by my back door that everybody used to come to my house had this light that would come on, a motion-activated light. And I was looking out the window, and I see that light come on. And I already have the dread. The dread is already set in, the remorse and the dread. And I see his dad just storm up those steps and his shadow go past the motion-activated light. And so what did I do? I just went to the bathroom, the downstairs bathroom, just locked myself in that. I was like, I'm just going to let this whole thing blow over. I'm going to let this bathroom be my storm shelter, my, you know, my nuclear bunker. I'm going to hide in this bathroom until everything just blows over. And I could hear the dad anger through the door, though. You know, he wasn't, again, this isn't an abusive thing. It's not like, it's scathing in its own right. But in this case, the dad anger actually reached a point where his voice was barely audible. It's, if you've had a cat, you know, sometimes your cat will hiss or screech, but they do so with like such a deep level of, they are so disturbed that nothing comes out. And their mouth opens and just, it's like, it's not even a hiss. It's almost, it's barely audible. It's just like this, like, very light hiss. Like, the shriek is so high-pitched that you can't even hear it. Like, it's a dog whistle. Like, that's like the ultimate form of dad anger, is when the dad is so upset that it's like, it reaches a frequency that you can't even pick up on. And who knows if sound is even coming out? Who knows if a dog could even hear it? But I could pick up on that. I think kids can hear it. That's the thing, is I think there's this frequency when the dad is just so upset that his mouth just opens and like this mist comes out, and only children can pick up on that. Anybody else would be like, oh, look at that dad over there. He's yawning, because people say that. People would totally tell somebody, look at that dad, he's yawning. No, to anybody else, it would just look like his mouth open. But to us, it's almost like some sort of siren that is just crushing us. Some sort of magical spell that just causes kids to like fall to their knees with their hands on their ears, but they're laughing. I remember feeling like, that's the thing I want to say too, is despite all of the dread, despite the fact that I was hiding in my own bathroom while my friend's dad stormed up the back steps, let out a high frequency screech and pulled him, you know, away and took him home. Despite all of that, despite like how upsetting and disturbing and scary it was, I was fucking laughing and loving every second of it. Because that's the thing. It's almost like being scared. It's almost like when you watch a horror movie or read about something really scary and you enjoy that feeling. The rest of the night, you kind of enjoy that you're looking out your window. You know, oh, what's moving in the bushes? It's the same thing with dad anger. It's the same thing with getting in trouble. You're laughing despite feeling like, oh, God, like, I'm in trouble. This is bad. There's something exhilarating in it. But yeah, just to go to segue using that story, prank phone calls in general, I truly deeply miss the ability to make prank phone calls. And who knows if I would still have a need to make them, but I feel very fortunate that I lived in a time when I could make them. And my friends and I loved making them. They gave this thing, even in elementary school, because most of the calls I made were in elementary school, because by the time I was in junior high, I think my first year of junior high was 1998 and 1999, so like the start of the year was 1998. By then, caller ID was much more common, and people knew about Star 69. Technology was, you know, getting better at that point, and so it was getting more and more difficult to make prank phone calls. You had to like take notes on which families were totally out of touch with technology and go from there by that point. But so a lot of the prank phone calls I made were late elementary school, because by then you kind of have that sinister desire to fuck with people, because you don't really have that as a child, as like a young child. I would say like between kindergarten and fourth grade, you don't really have that desire to prank somebody. You know, if you look at pictures of yourself from between like first and fourth grade, you're always just smiling. You know, your birthday party, you're always smiling. And then if you look at photos of your childhood, like from fifth grade on, you see a little bit more mischief in your eye. You start to make, you know, the faces you make, the things you and your friends are doing, the poses, you start to see a little bit more mischief. And then, you know, it's no surprise that that's also when you start making prank phone calls. So I remember making them. I remember like they gave out this phone book to every elementary school student that had every student, their parents' names, and their phone number for every grade by class. So you could get every kid in your entire school's phone number, and your school provided it. Your school was practically winking at you saying, you know, might want to prank these people. Here's a list of everybody's contact information, just in case, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but just in case you want to prank somebody, here is every resource you could possibly need. I don't think they included teachers' home phone numbers, though. I wish they did. But you could look those up in a public phone book. You could look those up in the big book, the city phone book. But they gave you this little, essentially a prank phone call manual. They might as well have called it the prank phone call manual. And so you were able to prank call some of your classmates. I remember there was one kid that my friend and I, and it's funny how I bring up like a friend and I, because in so many of these cases, it's like, who do you think was, whose idea do you think it was to make these prank phone calls? It's always me and a friend. How many prank phone calls did those friends make on their own? I don't know. But I did have one friend, though, my friend Nick, like he and I would make them together. It was very collaborative. But I think in some of these cases, I was definitely the instigator. And this one friend and I repeatedly called this household, this kid. He was not a friend of ours. Like, we weren't bullying him or anything like that. I hate to even bring that word up, because that's a topic for another time. But we certainly weren't bullying him. Like, we had no problems with him at school. He just seemed like a good person to prank call. There were some different factors that probably went into our logic there. And we called just repeatedly, man. His family also didn't seem like the type who would do anything in response, and his mom answered every time. We ended up talking to the mom every single time, and God knows what we said. We didn't try to scare her or anything. It was probably really lowbrow and stupid. But at one point, she finally just answered the phone, and this is how she answered the phone. Are you having fun? No hello, no uh-huh, no yeah. You know, it was just straight up, are you having fun? And it was like, yeah, actually we are. Are you having fun? Yeah, we're having a lot of fun. This is actually one of the funnest things I've done in a long time, is repeatedly prank phone call you. Most of them were pretty innocent. Most prank phone calls were pretty innocent. Almost all of them. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's kind of what I miss about prank phone calls, is they were mostly innocent. Yeah, they could always have a sinister edge, and, you know, you didn't want to seem like you were actually threatening somebody. I mentioned Scream. Scream had come out, and the guy does the whole... There's the whole infamous intro to that movie where the guy calls Drew Barrymore, and he seems kind of seductive, and then he's like, I want to know who I'm looking at. And then he gets mad and all that. And so, you know, to a kid who was into that, there was a little bit of an inspiration to creep people out, but that really wasn't the motivation for me. It was more just a psychological game. But what my friend Nick and I eventually got into, because once caller ID became more popular and it became harder to prank call your peers and people, real people, what we started to do is we would stay up really late and watch infomercials. And in particular, the psychic hotline, because the way the psychic hotline works, if you're not familiar, or at least how it used to work, is you would call the 1-800 number, and then you would talk to a representative. And there's no money involved at that point. You're just calling the 800 number, and you talk to this preliminary, it's like almost like this little mini interview. And it says a lot about how the psychic hotline works, but in this little mini interview with a representative, someone who probably hated their job would say, ask you like your name. They would say like, well, how's your day been? And they would just ask you some basic questions about yourself. Nothing too revealing, but looking at it now, I can see where they would use that information once they patched you in with the psychic to kind of like get a feel for how to read your mind properly. Because, you know, if you're a psychic, one thing you want to know is how someone's day has been. Because that will impact what you tell them, how you tell it to them, essentially what they are looking for. So it was interesting how these little preliminary interviews were probably used. They were probably fed to the psychic. And I do believe in psychic activity to some extent. And maybe there are some true blue psychics who, you know, just had to get a gig on the psychic hotline. But I don't buy into it much, you know, and I see where the scam, one aspect of the scam was doing these little interviews. But we saw a great opportunity in these little interviews. So we would call the 800 number of the psychic hotline, and we would just fuck with the interviewer. It was free. They hate their jobs. They're up in the middle of the night. And so we would essentially pretend to be characters. You know, if you listen to this show, I only occasionally do an accent here or there. So we would do, and back then I didn't do the East Coast accents. That wasn't a thing yet. It's pretty much the only way my brain works these days. I only think these days in an East Coast accent. But back then we would do what we would call redneck voices. So kind of a shitty Southern drawl, trying to sound older than we were, trying to sound like just some drunk hillbilly. And so we would usually do that, and we would kind of launch into something personal. Like, I remember one interview, and we would do it with other things, not just the psychic hotline, but anything where you called in and had to go through some kind of sort of interview or discussion process through an infomercial. And we would just get oddly personal. Like, I remember one time telling the guy about like some series of events that led to me, quote unquote, blowing chunks. And the guy was like, what's that? And the interviewer was like, what's that? And I said, you don't know what blue chunks is? You don't know what blue chunk, but blow. I think in the story, I was like, and then I blew chunks. And then he was like, what's that? And I was like, you don't know what blue chunks means? So that's just an idea. That's just a little taste. Of what we would do. But, you know, over time, that's been lost. And because I think there was something not terribly sinister about prank phone calls, as long as you weren't, like, horribly harassing or threatening somebody, it was very non-threatening. And I guess if you couldn't figure out who it was, and if someone does it repeatedly enough, it could get kind of fucked up. I mean, I can see where it goes too far. But I think it's much different than the sort of anonymous internet harassment that came on the heels of the prank phone call era, because with the internet, it was almost immediately kind of threatening and extra harsh. You know, there weren't even voices involved. You know, I always talk about how the internet wasn't nearly as scary in the 90s as people made it out to be. There was the hysteria over, you're going to lose your wife to a man in a chat room. Your kid's going to get abducted by a pedophile. Your kid's going to be abducted by a pedophile. And you're going to get your credit card stolen. You're going to get your identity stolen. And someone could be anybody. They could pretend they're from the South at one moment, and then they could pretend they're from New York in the next moment, while they're using your credit card, and then they're having an affair with your wife in a chat room, you know. So there was this just immense paranoia about the internet, and I think a lot of that was unfounded, even though some fucked up things might have happened through the internet or because of the internet, and still do, As people have become much more comfortable with the internet to the point of just letting it rule their lives, I mean, look at the world we live in today. The internet itself hasn't changed or necessarily become safer. If anything, I think it's actually less safe. I think the overconnectedness of today is actually far more dangerous, and the amount of information that dangerous people have access to is much worse. So all the kind of hysteria over the deep, dark internet of the 90s was very much unfounded. But that said, I don't think that the way that people would prank each other, even in the earliest days of the internet, was nearly as healthy as prank phone calls. I think the internet pranks were just, from right off the start, much darker. It was a lonely person alone lashing out. Whereas prank phone calls was sort of a performance art. You know, it wasn't somebody just like, it was usually a group of friends. You know, you would motivate each other, and there were those CDs, like the Jerky Boys were very popular. In the underground, there was Longmont Potion Castle, which, you know, those tapes spread. But the Jerky Boys had a movie. There was a movie about guys who got famous through their prank phone calls, and there were others like that too. And then later came that like Crank Yanker show, which I never actually watched. They took puppets and then had these prank phone calls on, and the puppets would act out the conversations. There was some kind of, you know, it was sort of performance art. In order to do an effective and good prank phone call, you had to know how to perform on the spot, and you had to improvise. I mean, one of my best friends, Miles, we didn't grow up together. He's a little bit older than I am. But his email for many years was a reference to a prank phone call he made where he on a whim just gave this name, and it became this very almost esoteric sounding email. So it was funny to find out what the origin of it was, but it shows you that, like, you know, it takes a level of improvisation, and it was great. It was good for you. I think it was good for you. I think it helped develop your social skills to do a good prank phone call. And in some ways I probably wouldn't be doing a podcast if prank phone calls were no longer or if prank phone calls were still a thing. I probably wouldn't have a need to do this. I would probably be doing this, but I would probably be calling everybody in the phone book every night and just yelling at them in an East Coast voice instead of doing a podcast. So in that way, maybe it's good that prank phone calls ended. Maybe it's good that that's no longer a thing. And of course, you can still do them. People will say, oh, you get like a VP, whatever the fuck it is, like some sort of, you have to do it through your computer essentially, and unless you're like a genius or a rocket scientist, unless you're one of these these computer wizards, unless you're one of them, can't do a prank phone call. I mean, the amount of effort you have to put into it, and who wants to do one through a computer anyway? Who even wants to do one through a cell phone? You have to like mask your IP, you have to like make all these safety security measures. Like, who wants to do that? I'm sure every 5-year-old in 2025 will just know how to do it instinctively. So maybe things will come full circle and prank phone calls will make a comeback. God knows, I hope they do. But yeah, I probably wouldn't be doing a podcast if I could still do that. Or maybe in some way, me doing a podcast is kind of like the next step. This is kind of like the next step in development from being a child doing prank phone calls. Like, it was all leading toward this. I don't know. Because it's all sort of connected in my mind, thinking about it now, thinking about some of the things I say, some of the things I talk about. It's like, I'm basically pranking everybody This is basically like a philosophical prank show. I'm basically just pranking everybody who listens to this show. But at least I'm not erupting into dad anger. I don't think that's really come about yet. Maybe in one or two episodes I get into dad anger, but I'm not a dad, so I don't really know where that comes from yet inside of myself. I don't have that reservoir that dads have. You know, I don't have my testicles running around the room, so I don't know quite what it's like to be a wraith-like shrieker. But if I did, I'd probably be doing it through the phone. I'd probably be calling everybody in the phone book and just erupting into dad anger. That'd be a great way to connect the two topics of this episode. I'd be just an utter wraith. I'd be the wraith of my community. Just dad anger and prank phone calls would be my MO.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains,